exercise, a good diet, getting adequate sleep, and seeing your healthcare providers regularly.
And protect yourself and others by getting the COVID-19 vaccine and booster, wearing a mask, and social distancing wherever possible. Remember, health is a human right.
On behalf of the entire KBOO community, we'd like to offer our sincerest thanks for your contribution to KBOO's end-of-year membership drive. We challenged KBOO supporters to help us meet 3 donation matches and raise $45,000, and you stepped up. Your generous support, combined with hundreds of other community radio donors, helped to raise $85,000 for KBOO. We knew you could do it, and together we did.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, board meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month starting at 6 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Labor Radio. Of the working class, by the working class, for the working class. I'm Laura Wadlin, here with my co-host, Jamie Partridge. Hey, Jamie.
Hey, Laura.
Our topic is City Workers Ready to Strike. Our guests this evening are of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, AFSCME Local 189, the largest of city worker unions. Jacob Brostoff, the vice president, Chris Flannery, shop steward and organizer, and Alex Piero, rank and file member. Welcome.
Thanks, Laura.
Hello.
Thank you for having us.
AFSCME 189 represents close to 1,000 workers at most city bureaus, including transportation, water, housing, development services, and more. AFSCME 189 is part of a 6-union coalition called the District Council of Trade Unions, DCTU, which includes machinists and mechanics, electricians, painters, plumbers, and operating engineers. Jacob works in the Office of Community and Civic Life. Alex works for the Portland Bureau of Transportation, PBOT. And Chris works in the Housing Bureau. You're all right in the thick of the struggle for decent wages and working conditions. So thank you for joining us, and let's start with the headlines. By the time this show airs, we expect DCTU DCTU members will have voted overwhelmingly to authorize a strike, which could kick off as soon as the first week of February if the city doesn't come to its senses. City workers have not been on strike for a long while. What brought you all to this point? Jacob?
You know, we've been at this for over 2 years at this point, and the process is supposed to take half a year. And that's largely because the city management team, their bargaining team, has been slow walking this and not being straightforward about bringing proposals on time and all the things. And so people are tired and feel disrespected. And in addition to the fact that they're proposing to pay us wages that earn less next year than they've earned this year, to pay for less next year than they're paying for this year, people just feel really disrespected by the city's management and the bargaining team. The latest is that they tried to interfere in our strike authorization election by intimidating people and telling them they're not able to vote who are members. So, you know, that's more bad faith on the part of the city, I would say.
Sure, yeah. Well, just, you know, speaking as a rank and file member, like, we've all made a ton of sacrifices throughout the pandemic and before that. I think, you know, one main thing that I can speak to from my perspective is I think workers are really feeling the energy of other campaigns. You know, people are really acutely aware of the labor situation in the United States right now. And I think that that's definitely kind of, you know, helping fuel the fire of people realizing, you know, what their value is and kind of what it takes for us to realize that value.
Do you have anything to add, Chris?
Yeah, I think in addition to Alex's point about how the labor shortage is making us all reevaluate that relationship, and to Jacob's also, I agree with everything he's saying about how the bargaining process has been frankly infuriating to many of us who have been, you know, patiently waiting and coming to the table and doing our best to get this done in an equitable and a fair-minded way. And on top of all of the circumstances we're currently dealing with, you know, as a world with COVID and with everything going on, we have additional projects and programs and more work all the time. And to be stymied when all we're asking for really is to keep up with inflation and maybe get, you know, some things to help us retain the talent we need to do the work. And to be told you're fine, you're paid well enough, there's nothing to see here, I think there are a lot of folks who are ready to take action.
You know, the city says that its workers make good wages. Here's a quote: Portland Mayor and City and Ted Wheeler and City Commissioners issued a statement after our first rally saying, "Fair pay, safe working conditions, and the opportunity to fully participate and benefit from our economy, community, and our country. All working people deserve these basic things." Well, the unions say the workers are being displaced out of the city that they work in because the wages don't keep up with housing costs. So tell us about their economic proposal and why it's not enough.
So to talk about the city's proposals, we have proposed increases to certain classifications to keep up with the private sector and comparable public sector agencies and the general labor marketplace right now. And so, for example, the IBEW electricians that work in the private sector just got a significant raise at their union hall through their bargaining, and electricians at the city did not get a comparable raise, or at least haven't so far. And the city is not proposing to increase their wages significantly at all. What they're offering is 2 one-time payments of $1,500, which would be taxed for most people at about 40% or more. No increases to our base wages, except for a couple of very minor classifications, and no across-the-board increases for everyone. So to give you some context, in our last bargaining in 2017, we were able to secure across-the-board increases for every classification and some specific increases for certain classifications. This time, what they're proposing is to pay us last year's cost of living adjustment, which is about 1.6%, And then this coming year, capping our cost of living adjustment at 5%. So that doesn't keep up with inflation. And frankly, it's insulting because people outside of the city are earning more money than we are, and they're able to keep their wages up pace with inflation. So it's terribly insulting to our workforce who work very hard and care about the work they do and are here to serve Portland and Portlanders. And meanwhile, we're being told there's no money. And just for context, the last two cycles of bargaining, and I'm pretty sure before that, the city said the same thing, there's no money. There's never any money. And I wanna be really clear, these are moral and ethical choices the city council is making and the city's management is making to pay money to workers or to pay money for other things. And I regret that there's that kind of scarcity mentality right now, but those are moral and ethical choices that people are making. So I wanna just put that out there.
So Chris here, I work at the Housing Bureau. So when I saw the numbers that management had quoted about the median income, what I noticed immediately is that that figure counts as low income in the city of Portland. If you're looking at a family of four anyway. But it really got me thinking. And so I went and I looked at the wages. And if we want to talk about, you know, making a good wage in the city of Portland, about 6% of AFSCME folks, so more than 1 in 20, would count as low income, 80% AMI, in the city of Portland today. As a one-person household. So, I mean, if you're a single parent, if you've got another person in your household, like a parent that you're taking care of or a partner who's not working, that number comes up to 25% of us would count as low income. So the specific naming of the number, which let's be honest, $70,000 sounds like a lot of money, and it is a lot of money, right? 73, whatever it is they had mentioned. But with median, you're talking about half of us make less than that. And also in the city of Portland, the 100% AMI, the average for a family of four is $97,000. So it's very frustrating to get pushback when we're asking for an across the board increase so that folks in our union, and you know, some of us make as little as $17 an hour, when they're working full-time jobs serving the city. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, and I mean, I can speak to that as, you know, a sole income earner of a family of four. You know, we had our first child right before the pandemic started, and my wife left work with the plan on going back, and things change, you know? So I think, Chris, that last statistic that you had of, I think it was 64% of employees, if it was a family of four, would be considered low income under 80% AMI in Portland. You know, so that's me, that's my family, you know, who falls into that bracket. And I think, you know, it's again, just another kind of instance of, you know, the city asking the workers, asking labor to foot the bill for, you know, the rising costs of everything, of doing business, you know.
The city says that it can't afford what the DCTU is demanding, but it's offering police officers a $25,000 signing bonus and is apparently awash with federal dollars. What about that?
Yeah, in my mind, this speaks to what Jacob was talking about in the last question about, you know, a budget being a moral document. And, you know, policymakers make statements all the time, but the loudest statements they make are the statements they make with their budgets, you know, because that's the concrete, that's the material thing that they have control over. And if that's the choice they make, I think that they're making, I think it speaks for itself to prioritize that over, you know, basic services that every Portlander, you know, needs to live.
I think one thing that I saw, Jamie, was when that big 60 something million dollar budget bump came through, it immediately got turned around and assigned to programs, but we didn't get staff increases to go with those programs. And I am 100% committed to the mission of serving our city, of you know, housing the unhoused in Portland, And also, we need staff to run the programs.
Just tuned in. This is KVOO Portland Labor Radio. We're listening to AFSCME Local 189 members Jacob Rostov, Chris Flannery, and Alex Piero, city workers ready to strike.
So, you're ready to strike. How will that pressure the city to do the right thing?
Can I speak to this, guys?
Take it away.
Okay. So, a strike is a tactic, not a goal, right? We're not trying to strike. That's not the goal. We are backed into a corner, and we have very few tools left at our disposal. And a strike is one of the main tools we have left at our disposal. So, because the city has slow-walked negotiations, because we've been stonewalled at the table, because there's been zero progress on the part of the city in this process, we are looking at authorizing the bargaining team to call a strike. And that is sending a message to city management and city council that, you know, we do the work of the city. We serve Portland and we serve Portlanders. We provide needed essential services all across the city. And when our only tool left is to withhold our labor, I think that speaks for itself in terms of how dire the situation is for us as workers.
Anything to add, Chris or Alex?
I think, frankly, if our members of, you know, the DCTU, if all six of our unions, we vote to authorize the strike and we don't show up to work, not a lot is going to happen. Our president, Rob Martineau, loves to tell the, like, hey, if your manager doesn't show up tomorrow, your job's still going to get done. But if you don't show up tomorrow, who's going to do your work? So when you think about, we've got the folks who provide safe drinking water, who make sure that the wastewater flows to where it should go, inspectors making sure that our crosswalks operate, you know, people building curbs, cutting curbs. You know, we've got folks who are collecting tax and revenue information, people who are servicing your water bill, the electricians and plumbers that keep the city's facilities running. And we've got in the DCTU, I think roughly 1,200 of the city's employees. And that would make a dent, even if we weren't so highly concentrated and highly skilled and certified areas, that would be hard to replace with scab labor.
Yeah, and I just want to echo what Jacob and Chris both said. You know, I think it's important to understand that, you know, withholding your labor is not the first option in these negotiations, but it is the last option, and it's the last option for a reason. You know, because it's the most effective at getting the point across. If you look at, there's the King Soopers in Denver right now, you know, to see what happens if the workers don't show up even for 2 days, you know. And like Chris said, if your manager's out for a day or two, the team, you know, continues carrying on, and, you know, business can operate as usual.
Right. Fred Meyer workers weren't on the job for barely 24 hours, and UFCW got one of their best contracts. So if you do go on strike, how will that affect Portland residents and businesses? What do you want pro-union residents to do?
We want pro-union residents to contact their commissioners, their city council, and share with them their feelings about the services we provide to the city. And you elect city council to serve your interests and to manage the city. And if you feel strongly about our struggle, we would really appreciate it if you would let your city commissioners know and the mayor know how you feel about this struggle.
Chris here, we would love to have you out there with us. You know, we'll make signs together. It'll be a great time. Right now, Saturday, 2 p.m., there's a rally in support of city workers that's planned by our wonderful community allies. And yeah, Jacob's absolutely right. We'd love for you to reach out to the commissioners and also reach out to us if you see us on a picket line. It's always nice to get a little solidarity honk. If you've got the time and the inclination, you know, mask up, come out and walk with us.
Yeah, absolutely. Show up, call your commissioners, like both of them said. I think there's also a there's a solidarity fund that I'm not sure if somebody has the information for that we can share towards the end. As far as how it would affect, you know, Portland residents and businesses, I don't know if you could really overstate what the impacts would be. I think it's simply put, the reality is the city just cannot fill the gaps. You know, they can't afford to not have its essential services running really for any period of time.
If you're not sure how to contact City Council, all you need to do is dial 503-823-4000 and ask to speak with each one of the council offices. So that's 503-823-4000.
Call them early, call them often.
Please.
Even before there's a strike, because they have to get, they're the ones that have to direct their negotiators to settle this thing in a fair way. So just on the question a little deeper about how this affects Portland, a strike would affect Portland residents and in particular businesses. We often say that the city is run by the developers. It's the capitalist class that's behind a lot of the decisions that the city council makes. And the Bureau of Development Services issues permits and does inspections for all the buildings that are built in this town. So every day that a developer can't move their project, they're losing money. They're going to be in the ear of the city council.
That's right, Jamie.
Just as an example.
That's right, and it extends even beyond developments. So for example, we pay bills as a city, right? We have contractors that work for us in addition to employees, and the accountants are the people that pay those bills. And we're a pretty lean organization in general in certain functions. So for example, the accountants are very busy because there's not a lot of them. And if they're not there to pay bills, then things are gonna grind to a halt. And that is going to cause all kinds of secondary and tertiary problems for the people that depend on city services and business functions. And we don't want that. And this is where we're at in terms of negotiations.
A number of pro-union activists from the DSA, other unions, and the progressive community are ready to help out. What can they do to help, and how can they fill in with actions that striking union members can't?
Yeah, you know, it's a great question. I think we're so used to being very, very insular that we haven't reached out as much to our community partners as I think we're realizing we need to be more integrated with. Helping get the message amplified by reaching out to commissioners or spreading the word in the public. We've got these actions like rallies or, we had a support action, I think, the other day at Kirby where folks were cheering on some of our DCTU folks. Simply showing us that you're with us, I think will help many of our members feel, you know, reassured that it's hard to advocate for yourself sometimes, especially when the message you hear is about how we should be thankful for what we have already. But also I think we can do better, both for the people who are doing the work of making the city function and also for the people who are enjoying the city services, who rely on city services.
One concrete way people can help us is by helping us out with contributions to and sharing the word about our solidarity fund. You can learn about our struggle and help us by contributing and spreading the word by going to tinyurl.com/DCTU fund. So that's tinyurl.com/DCTU fund. And if you want to hear interviews with people that serve the community directly as city workers, you can go to afscme189.com/interviews. So that's afscme189.com/interviews. We have a number of interviews up with our workers talking about the impacts to the community if they had to go on strike.
Great. I had just an example of how community members can support a strike in actions where strikers themselves are unable. Just today in at the supermarkets in Colorado, a court issued an injunction saying that the union could no longer picket within 50 feet of the entrance to the stores. Well, that restricts the union, but it doesn't restrict community members who can picket in front of the entrances to the stores. So these things happen, you know, in labor struggles where the unions can be restricted, but then others of us have our First Amendment rights to assemble and protest.
Any support we can get from the community, we really appreciate. And thank you to everyone who's providing that support.
And if people listening want to get involved in solidarity actions like pickets, is there a website where they can sign up to attend actions?
There is. It is tinyurl.com/cityworkersolidarity. So that's tinyurl.com/cityworkersolidarity, all one word.
Great. There are any last thoughts any of you want to share with our listeners about this, about city workers ready to strike?
Hey, Jamie, it's Chris. I think if I was going to share anything with the folks who are listening about, you know, the city workers getting ready to strike, it would be that we didn't get these jobs because we thought they were going to get us rich. You know, we don't do this work because it's comes with a lot of celebrity or benefits. But there should be decent wages, there should be good benefits, the actual insurance benefits, and we should be able to retire with dignity. And as we see some of the benefits of our contract eroded away over time, we keep having to come back to the table and fight more and more just to keep what was already supposed to be ours. So please show us your support. We want to be at work. We want to be serving our city. And the sooner council can work with their bargaining partners to offer us a contract we can bring back to our members, the sooner we can be back at work.
So that wraps it up for this evening's show. You've been listening to Jacob Rostoff, Chris Flannery, and Alex Piero of City Workers AFSCME Local 189, ready to strike. Thanks to my co-host, Laura Wadlin. I'm Jamie Partridge. This is Labor Radio, this Monday and every Monday at 6 p.m. Stay tuned for Prison Pipeline.
Queen Ida, and you're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM on the radio. Your spot for Cajun and Zydeco music. Bon Ton Relay.
Understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad,
greetings and welcome to Prison Pipeline, airing from the studios of KBOO Portland. I'm your host, Adam Carpinelli. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. Today, we're here with Trish Jordan from Red Lodge Transition Services. How you doing, Trish?
Hi, Adam. How are you? We're doing well.
Great. It's so glad to have you back on the show again. It's been quite a while, and a lot's happened in the last couple of years since you've been on, and definitely for listeners, would love to just know more about you and how you kind of